Chapter 17. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 equals 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 the duck de la Villette. And stepped at once into a cooler clime. Cooper, Keats fell by a criticism. Who was it died of, the Andromache? Asterisk 1, ignoble souls. De la Villette perished of an ortolan. Lister Ernest Brief. Assist me, spirit of Apicius. A golden cage bore the little winged wanderer, enamored, melting, indolent, to the Chaussee d'Antin, from its home in far Peru, from its queenly possessor La Bellissima, to the Duc de la Villette, six peers of the empire, conveyed the happy bird. That night the duck was to sup alone. In the privacy of his bureau he reclined languidly on that ottoman for which he sacrificed his loyalty in outbidding his king, the notorious Ottoman of Cadet. He buries his face in the pillow. The clock strikes. Unable to restrain his feelings, his grace swallows an olive. At this moment the door gently opens to the sound of soft music, and lo, the most delicate of birds is before the most enamored of men. But what inexpressible dismay now overshadows the countenance of the duck. Horror. Jean. Baptiste. Loiseau. Ah, bon Dieu. C'est Loiseau modest K2 as deshabille de ses plumes, AK2 as servi sans papier. It is superfluous to say more. The duck expired in a paroxysm of disgust. Ha, 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 said his grace on the third day after his decease. He, replied the devil faintly, drawing himself up with an air of hauteur. Why, surely you are not serious, retorted de la Villette. I have sinned, qu'est-ce I, but, my good sir, consider, you have no actual intention of putting such barbarous threats into execution. Know what? Said his majesty, sir, strip. Strip, indeed. Very pretty, I faith. No, sir, I shall not strip. Who are you, pray, that I, Duc de la Villette, Prince de Foie Gras, just come of age, author of the Mazurkiad, apostrophe and member of the Academy, should divest myself at your bidding of the sweetest pantaloons ever made by Burton, the daintiest robe the chamber ever put together by Rombert, to say nothing of the taking my hair out of paper, not to mention the trouble I should have in drawing off my gloves. Who am I? Ah, true. I am Baal-Zebub, Prince of the Fly. I took thee, just now, from a rosewood coffin inlaid with ivory. Thou wast curiously scented, and labeled as Perinvis. Belial sent thee, my inspector of cemeteries. The pantaloons, which thou sayest, were made by Burton, are an excellent pair of linen drawers, and thy robe de chamber is a shroud of no scanty dimensions. Sir, replied the duck, I am not to be insulted with impunity. Sir, I shall take the earliest opportunity of avenging this insult. Sir, you shall hear from me. In the meantime, au revoir. And the duck was bowing himself out of the satanic presence, when he was interrupted and brought back by a gentleman in waiting. Hereupon his grace rubbed his eyes, yawned, shrugged his shoulders, reflected. Having become satisfied of his identity, he took a bird's eye view of his whereabouts. The apartment was superb. Even de la Villette pronounced it bien comme il faut. It was not its length nor its breadth, but its height, that was appalling. There was no ceiling, certainly none, but a dense whirling mass of fiery colored clouds. His grace's brain reeled as he glanced upward. From above, hung a chain of an unknown blood-red metal its upper end lost, like the city of Boston, parmi les nous. From its nether extremity swung a large cresset. The duck knew it to be a ruby, but from it there poured a light so intense, so still, so terrible, Persia never worshipped such, Kiber never imagined such, Musulman never dreamed of such, when, drugged with opium, he has tottered to a bed of poppies, his back to the flowers, and his face to the god Apollo. The duck muttered a slight oath, decidedly approbatory. The corners of the room were rounded in two niches. Three of these were filled with statues of gigantic proportions. Their beauty was Grecian, their deformity Egyptian, their town ensemble French. In the fourth niche the statue was veiled. It was not colossal. But then there was a taper ankle, a sandaled foot. De La Millette pressed his hand upon his heart, closed his eyes, raised them, and caught his satanic majesty in a blush. But the paintings. Cupris. Astarte. Astaroth. A thousand and the same. And Raphaelus beheld them. Yes, Raphaelus been here, for did he not paint the? And was he not consequently damned? The paintings, the paintings. Oh luxury! Oh love! Who, gazing on those forbidden beauties, shall have eyes for the dainty devices of the golden frames that besprinkled, like stars, the hyacinth and the porphyry walls? But the duck's heart is fainting within him. He is not, however, as you suppose, dizzy with magnificence, nor drunk with the ecstatic breath of those innumerable censers. Kestra I cadet out ses choses ille penspoku mace. The duck de la Millette is terror-stricken. For, through the lurid vista which a single uncurtained window is affording, lo, gleams the most ghastly of all fires. Le pauvre duck. He could not help imagining that the glorious, the voluptuous, the never-dying melodies which pervaded that hall, as they passed filtered and transmuted through the alchemy of the enchanted window panes, were the wailings and the howlings of the hopeless and the damned. And there too, there, upon the ottoman, who could he be? He, the petit mater, no, the deity who sat, as if carved in marble, a cui sourit, with his pale countenance, s'il mirmant? Mais il faut agir, that is to say, a Frenchman never faints outright. Besides, his grace hated a scene de la Millette as himself again. There were some foils upon a table, some points also. The duck setchipper. He measures 2 points, and, with a grace inimitable, offers his majesty the choice. Horror! His majesty does not fence. Mais il jouit, how happy a thought! But his grace had always an excellent memory. He had dipped in the diable of Abgaltier. Therein it is said, ou le diable nos pas refuser un jeu d'écart. But the chances, true desperate. But scarcely more desperate than the duck. Besides, was he not in the secret? Had he not skimmed over Pierre Lebrun? Was he not a member of the Club Vington? SSIG Perds, said he, G sir I do foist perdu I shall be doubly damned voilet out. Here his grace shrugged his shoulders. SIG Gan, G reviendra I a mes ordolens que les cartes soient preparées. His grace was all care, all attention, his majesty all confidence. A spectator would have thought of Francis and Charles. His grace thought of his game. His majesty did not think. He shuffled. The duck cut. The cards were dealt. The trump is turned as it is the king. No, it was the queen. His majesty cursed her masculine habiliments. De La Millette placed his hand upon his heart. They play. The duck counts. The hand is out. His majesty counts heavily, smiles, and is taking wine. The duck slips a card. Qu'est-ce vous faire, said his majesty, cutting. His grace bowed, dealt, and arose from the table and presented Leroy. His majesty looked chagrined. Had Alexander not been Alexander, he would have been Diogenes, and the duck assured his antagonist in taking leave. Case il nudit de la Millette il nort point d'objection d'être le diable. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 equals 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 the oblong box. Some years ago, I engaged passage from Charleston, S.C., to the city of New York, in the fine packet ship Independence, Captain Hardy. We were to sail on the 15th of the month, June, weather permitting. And on the 14th, I went on board, to arrange some matters in my stateroom. I found that we were to have a great many passengers, including a more than usual number of ladies. On the list, were several of my acquaintances, and among other names, I was rejoiced to see that of Mr. Cornelius Wyatt, a young artist, for whom I entertained feelings of warm friendship. He had been with me a fellow student at C University, where we were very much together. He had the ordinary temperament of genius, and was a compound of misanthropy, sensibility, and enthusiasm. To these qualities he united the warmest and truest heart which ever beat in a human bosom. I observed that his name was carded upon 3 state rooms, and, upon again referring to the list of passengers, I found that he had engaged passage for himself, wife, and 2 sisters his own. The state rooms were sufficiently roomy, and each had 2 berths, one above the other. These berths, to be sure, were so exceedingly narrow as to be insufficient for more than 1 person. Still, I could not comprehend why there were 3 state rooms for these 4 persons. I was, just at that epoch, in one of those moody frames of mind which make a man abnormally inquisitive about trifles. And I confess, with shame, that I busied myself in a variety of ill-bred and preposterous conjectures about this matter of the supernumerary stateroom. It was no business of mine, to be sure, but with none the less pertinacity did I occupy myself in attempts to resolve the enigma. At last I reached a conclusion which wrought in me great wonder why I had not arrived at it before. "It is a servant, of course," I said. "What a fool I am, not sooner to have thought of so obvious a solution." And then I again repaired to the list, but here I saw distinctly that no servant was to come with the party, although, in fact, it had been the original design to bring one, for the words "ND servant" had been first written and then overscored. Oh, extra baggage, to be sure, I now said to myself. Own thing he wishes not to be put in the hold, something to be kept under his own eye. I have it a painting, or so, and this is what he has been bargaining about with Nicolino, the Italian Jew. This idea satisfied me, and I dismissed my curiosity for the nonce. Why, it's 2 sisters I knew very well, and most amiable and clever girls they were. His wife he had newly married, and I had never yet seen her. He had often talked about her in my presence, however, and in his usual style of enthusiasm. He described her as of surpassing beauty, wit, and accomplishment. I was, therefore, quite anxious to make her acquaintance. On the day in which I visited the ship, the 14th, Wyatt and party were also to visit it, so the captain informed me, and I waited on board an hour longer than I had designed, in hope of being presented to the bride, but then an apology came. Mrs. W. was a little indisposed, and would decline coming on board until tomorrow, at the hour of sailing. The morrow having arrived, I was going from my hotel to the wharf, when Captain Hardy met me and said that, owing to circumstances, a stupid but convenient phrase, he rather thought the Independence would not sail for a day or two, and that when all was ready, he would send up and let me know. This I thought strange, for there was a stiff southerly breeze, but as the circumstances were not forthcoming, although I pumped for them with much perseverance, I had nothing to do but to return home and digest my impatience at leisure. I did not receive the expected message from the captain for nearly a week. It came at length, however, and I immediately went on board. The ship was crowded with passengers, and everything was in the bustle attendant upon making sail. Wyatt's party arrived in about 10 minutes after myself. There were the 2 sisters, the bride, and the artist, the latter in one of his customary fits of moody misanthropy. I was too well used to these, however, to pay them any special attention. He did not even introduce me to his wife, this courtesy devolving, perforce, upon his sister Marion, a very sweet and intelligent girl, who, in a few hurried words, made us acquainted. Mrs. Wyatt had been closely veiled, and when she raised her veil, in acknowledging my bow, I confess that I was very profoundly astonished. I should have been much more so, however, had not long experience advised me not to trust, with too implicit a reliance, the enthusiastic descriptions of my friend, the artist, when indulging in comments upon the loveliness of woman. When beauty was the theme, I well knew with what facility he soared into the regions of the purely ideal. The truth is, I could not help regarding Mrs. Wyatt as a decidedly plain-looking woman. if not positively ugly, she was not, I think, very far from it. She was dressed, however, in exquisite taste, and then I had no doubt that as he had captivated my friend's heart by the more enduring graces of the intellect and soul. She said very few words, and passed at once into her stateroom with Mr. W. My old inquisitiveness now returned. There was no servant, that was a settled point. I looked, therefore, for the extra baggage. After some delay, a cart arrived at the wharf, with an oblong pine box, which was everything that seemed to be expected. Immediately upon its arrival we made sail, and in a short time were safely over the bar and standing out to sea. The box in question was, as I say, oblong. It was about 6 feet in length by 2.5 in breadth. I observed it attentively, and liked to be precise. Now this shape was peculiar, and no sooner had I seen it, than I took credit to myself for the accuracy of my guessing. I had reached the conclusion, it will be remembered, that the extra baggage of my friend, the artist, would prove to be pictures, or at least a picture, for I knew he had been for several weeks in conference with Nicolino. And now here was a box, which, from its shape, could possibly contain nothing in the world, but a copy of Leonardo's Last Supper, and a copy of this very Last Supper, done by Ruben I the Younger, at Florence, I had known, for some time, to be in the possession of Nicolino. This point, therefore, I considered as sufficiently settled. I chuckled excessively when I thought of my acumen. It was the first time I had ever known Wyatt to keep from me any of his artistical secrets, but here he evidently intended to steal a march upon me, and smuggle a fine picture to New York, under my very nose, expecting me to know nothing of the matter. I resolved to quiz him well, now and hereafter. One thing, however, annoyed me not a little. The box did not go into the extra stateroom. It was deposited in Wyatt's own, and there too, it remained, occupying very nearly the whole of the floor, no doubt to the exceeding discomfort of the artist and his wife. This the more especially as the tar, or paint with which it was lettered in sprawling capitals, emitted a strong, disagreeable, and, to my fancy, a peculiarly disgusting odor. On the lid, were painted the words Mrs. Adelaide Curtis, Albany, New York. Charge of Cornelius Wyatt Esquire this side up. To be handled with care. Now, I was aware that Mrs. Adelaide Curtis, of Albany, was the artist's wife's mother, but then I looked upon the whole address as a mystification, intended especially for myself. I made up my mind, of course, that the box and contents would never get farther north than the studio of my misanthropic friend, in Chambers Street, New York. For the first 3 or 4 days we had fine weather, although the wind was dead ahead, having chopped round to the northward, immediately upon our losing sight of the coast. The passengers were, consequently, in high spirits and disposed to be social. I must. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.